Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 10th episode of Peach State Prospects, your go-to podcast for all things Atlanta Braves minor league system. As always, I am your host, Gaurav, and I am joined here today with Garrett Spain and Joe. Garrett, how are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. Joe, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. It's good to be back.
We're really happy to have you back and glad you're able to get all your stuff done that you needed to do. Our agenda for today's episode is we're going to do a mailbag, and how it's going to work is I'll ask questions and we'll get these two studs' point of view, and we'll move from there. So let's go ahead and get started, shall we? Question number one, and Garrett, I'm going to go to you first. What is your overall opinion on Sabin Ceballos' season and his future expectations?
I think overall, I would say it's kind of been a bit of a disappointment for us, just not really seeing the power that we expected from him. And really, also defensively, he's made a lot of mistakes. Now, I think he can clean up those defensive errors. He has the arm to play the position, he has the glove work to play the position. It's just a matter of cleaning up the errors. If he doesn't, then he ends up at first base. And I don't necessarily think his bat is good enough to play at first base. It's been good seeing him make contact as much as he has. He's making good swing decisions, especially of late. So we're seeing improvement there. It's just a matter of a lot of his swings are not strong swings. He's not letting it rip and really making power swings. And that's kind of something that's concerning because it doesn't, you can look at the strength and say, well, you can dream on power, but if he's not swinging hard enough to make hard contact, then all of a sudden it's hard to really look at that and say, well, he'll definitely hit for power in the future. Well, he's not hitting hard fly balls at this point in time. And I think that seeing him swing hard and make contact at the same time is really going to be that next step for him. And so overall, I've been a little bit down on him this year, though I do think that there are some good signs. We've seen more power of late. And of course, the contact this year has been impressive.
Yeah, that hitting profile, if he's forced to play first, that takes a serious hit to his stock as a prospect. Joe, let's hear from you.
Honestly, I think Garrett summed up. I think that we are all in agreement on what we see with him. I think we all expected a little bit more out of him coming out of that draft. I think we expected the bat to play up a little more than it has. And I mean, basically what Garrett said, his concerns were, those are pretty much mine too. It's if the bat doesn't play where it's supposed to be, he can't be a first baseman and have, much value there. So the hope is that the power comes, but also that the defense develops as well. So again, Garrett nailed it on the head.
It'd be interesting to see a guy go from third base catcher to first base, and all it took was one professional season. It'd be a huge miss, but again, super early in the season. All right, question number two. Now, this is a question more along the lines of the philosophy of the Braves and less about the minor league system itself. Do you think it's Alex and this front office's philosophy to restore the farm system to its former glory and have a really competitive big league team like the Dodgers? Or do you think he's more so leaning on trading guys and making the big league team even better in this window? Joe, let's hear from you first.
So I think this is something that it makes Alex Anthopoulos really good at great at, in fact great at his job. He needs to balance the two, and he's been pretty open and honest that that's his goal. He wants to have a sustainable long-term contending club. You do that by having the pieces to go out and get what you need to supplement your roster at the deadline or in the off season as you need to fill holes. But also to have prospects that can come up and provide that depth and that next wave of players. So when you have a position that's freed up, you don't have 26 guys that all make 10, 15, $20 million. You can't, that's not sustainable. In the perfect world, I think you would have both. You'd have that top 10 system, you'd have a perennial World Series contender. Where the Braves are at right now, they are in a situation where they've graduated a ton of talent. They've traded quite a bit of their farm system for guys that are here long term. So it's not like they're trading for a bunch of rentals, but they're also still feeling the effects of not having that international signing pool to fill out those lower levels. So we're finally seeing some of those guys now being injected into the system with the Luis Guanipas and the Jose Perdomos, those guys now. But those years where we couldn't sign anybody for on the international market really, really took a toll on those lower levels. And so now you're seeing that the thin system make its way to the upper level. So I think that's what you're saying. I don't think it has anything to do with Alex Anthopoulos. It's just the situation that John Hart and John Coppola put the system in is kind of where we're at today. So my belief is, and it echoes kind of what Alex has said, is they're trying to be both of those long-term strong system and a perennial World Series contender.
That was a press conference-like answer, Joe. Well said. Garrett, you have anything to add on to that?
I mean, I think the premise of the question is kind of a little weird because every general manager wants a World Series contender and top 10 farm system every single year. That's the goal, right? I think generally speaking, he doesn't – like, I don't think that Alex Anthopoulos cares if Baseball America thinks the Braves are a good system. That's not the goal. And I think it's more about he wants to have a system that's going to constantly build a major league roster with either talent or trade pieces. And I think he's done a fairly good job of it. They're picking at the back end of the draft, and yet every year somebody's coming up and getting to the major leagues. So I think that's obviously the goal for every team. And is the focus more on developing guys for the major league team or for trades? I don't necessarily think that there's a goal in either direction. It's just get as much talent in, and how can you utilize that talent? For some guys, the best way to utilize that talent is to trade them and get value at positions of need. For some guys, it's especially your pitchers, it's going to be come in and fill in that fifth starter spot when we need it. So I think obviously that is the goal, to consistently have a perennial contender and top level farm system. But I don't necessarily think that the goal is, you know, to have a system that everyone thinks is good. It's just about do the other general managers, and he said this before, he hasn't had general managers look at him and say, you don't have enough players to make a trade with us. That's never happened. And so I don't think the system is as bad as people necessarily think. And I think that he's looking to make sure that, look, when it comes time, can I get the talent I need? And I think that he's doing that.
It's all about maximizing value, right? Just like you said, players are best suited for another team to increase the overall value of the major league team. I think that move is made. But if that player provides that certain threshold of value to the team itself, they'll do whatever they can to give as many opportunities. Well said, the two of you. Moving on to question three. If you had to choose one guy you think has a long and well-received career in Major League Baseball, of J.R. Ritchie, Owen Murphy, A.J. Smith-Shawver, and Hurston Waldrop, which one would you choose? I have a feeling I know the answer from both of you, but Garrett, let's go with you first.
Well, I think there's only two possible answers here because, look, Murphy, Ritchie, I like them both, but they've never pitched above A-ball. They're both injured. They're not in the same conversation as Hurston Waldrop and A.J. Smith-Shawver. They're just not at that level. Between the two, I think there's kind of two ways you can necessarily look at the question. The way I would kind of interpret the question is, you know, who do you think is more likely to have a more valuable long-term career? And, you know, if we're talking about that question specifically, A.J. Smith-Shawver, I think, is the better prospect. He's the guy that's more likely to stick in a rotation for the next 10 years. And so I go there. And I think that if we're looking at who would I project to produce the most value in his career, it would be A.J. Smith-Shawver. Now, looking at it from another perspective, if you're looking at purely the odds of being a major league pitcher for the next 10 years, let's say, you could look at Hurston Waldrop and say, well, fastball splitter, that guy right now could be a major league reliever. And for the next 10 years could be a dominant major league reliever. So he has I would say that Waldrop maybe has a higher percentage chance of being a good major leaguer for the next 10 years, but in terms of being a top level major league starter for the foreseeable future, I would project Smith Shawver to that role.
And Joe, anything to add on to that?
No, we kind of talked about this a little bit a few days ago, but I agree. It's AJ Smith Shawver is a clear answer for me. He definitely has become a major league starter. It's very unfortunate he's hurt right now, but if you ask me who's going to stick as a starter, it's AJ Smith Shawver. I totally agree with what Garrett said about Hurston Waldrop. He could right now, even with the control command issues, could be an effective and downright dominant reliever with that fastball and split combination right now for the next 10 years. And then the same thing with Owen Murphy and J.R. Ritchie. First, Owen Murphy, I feel like if he comes back from his injury and makes it, I think he can be a really good starter, but again, he's never pitched above A ball. And J.R. Ritchie, I don't know what he's going to be, you know, because he's never been able to stay healthy. I know there's a lot of talent in his arm, but you know, that one's kind of the one that, to me personally, no offense to anybody, but that one doesn't really belong in that question to me right now, because there's so many questions about J.R. Ritchie right now.
Yeah, I think that's well said, both of you. There's lots of projectability in someone like J.R. Ritchie, but when you're talking about projecting major league careers, two are in the majors right now, and it's really tough to have to pick, you know, someone else outside of someone that's literally in Major League Baseball right now. All right, question four, Garrett, you got one for the two of us. Let's hear from you.
Yeah, so this was kind of a question that was posed to me actually during the offseason, and I've been thinking about it a bit. And I think that when we talk about prospects a lot and when we evaluate prospects, a big part of our conversation is their weaknesses. What do they do wrong that could prevent them from reaching their ceiling or even being a Major League Baseball player? And I think a lot of times we come off as negative because of that. We're, you know, we look at a player that we like, and then we go through a list of all the reasons we think he may not make it one day. But if you look at it, what a Major League organization would do when they're going out and evaluating players, they're looking at the strengths of those players and how they can utilize the strengths of a player to make the Major League team better, and how they can maximize a player, right? And so I think the question I want to know from you guys and your perspective is when evaluating these prospects and when you're evaluating how they can project to the Major League level, how do you balance the idea of, you know, looking at a player's strength and maximizing a player's strengths versus mitigating their weaknesses in terms of how they develop a player? I guess I should go to somebody. We'll start with you, Gorf.
It's an extremely tough question to ask. It's tough. I try not to harp on to, you know, our perceived weaknesses on a player too much, unless it's, you know, outrageously screaming at you, like a strikeout rate of 40% while having a contact, you know, a batting average under 200. Like, that screams not a major league talent, that I go ahead and just remove that kind of player in my train of thought. But if a weakness is just, you know, something that they can't improve on or is slightly below major league average, if they have that strength, I will heavily lean on that strength itself. Because it's funny, as I watch more and more baseball and as I try to learn more and more about minor league baseball itself, I found myself starting to favor high MLB floors versus, you know, someone that has crazy projectability but is super raw, because I just think that gap in talent, that ability to convert into a major league player, is just so difficult. I mean, we're seeing people come in averaging, you know, 99 to 101 on fastballs now, and with crazy run. The talent level is so high now that I just want to see, hey, can you contribute in a way on a major league roster? And for that, now that heavily weighs in my evaluation of a prospect. I will go out for someone that has a few weaknesses, but then has enough strengths that to me say they're ready for the league. I'll value that over someone now. And this is not the same as I used to when I, you know, when I first came on with Battery Power, I guess Talking Chop then, where I was all about the wild cards. I was all about the loud tools. You know, like Izzy Wilson was someone that I was high on for the longest time just because you don't know what they could become. So for me now, yeah, it's more along the lines of really focusing on what they can do positively or what they can do well, and then subtracting just a little bit if I see that they, you know, if I perceive them as having a specific weakness.
Yeah, and Joe, I know you're fairly new to player evaluation, but, you know, for you kind of coming in now fresh and not necessarily having as much experience as we do, how have you felt about this specific subject in terms of projecting guys who, like he said, maybe have loud tools but don't, but strike out too much, or versus, you know, those kind of guys like maybe a Darius Bynes who, you know, command type, has a lot of strengths but maybe has a glaring weaknesses that feels like it's holding them back?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting topic because yeah, I think that there are times where when you're evaluating a player and trying to get across what a player needs to either develop or improve upon, right, to get to where their ceiling or get to that next level or make it to the major leagues, it can come off overly negative, especially when there's things about a player that can be, I guess, frustrating, like really frustrating. Like, I'll give a perfect example. This year, we all saw what Michael Harris could do last year. And this year, with watching him chase balls out of the zone at an insanely high rate that you is not something that you can do at a major league level and be a good major league player, but we've seen him be a good player. And when you bring those things up, sometimes that can come off as you saying, oh, this player is garbage, this player sucks. That's not necessarily what is trying to be conveyed. It's, hey, he needs to figure this out and fix his approach to it or whatever it may be, needs to work on this if he wants to be where he can be. And I think that what I think the three of us are trying to do is change that, the way that those things come off. It's about explaining to people who don't watch a ton of minor league baseball and don't read a bunch of scouting reports to see, hey, when this player comes up, even when they're a rookie, they're not perfect. There's things they still need to work on. It's like when Hurston Waldrop makes his debut and he's been hyped up and everyone thinks he's going to come in and be Paul Skeens. He's not. He's still developing. He's not a finished product now. And there's things that he needs to work on. And so I think it's just changing the way that we word things or you know, watching out for being overly harsh. And we do need to balance, hey, his splitter is absolutely disgusting. It is a phenomenal pitch. But as we saw like in his debut, if he's just throwing that over and over and over again because he can't be effective with his other pitches, good hitters and even just average major league hitters will lay off of it, and then you get into trouble. And I think just trying to get that message conveyed to the casual fan is what I think I wanted to bring, and I hope to bring going forward with this. So I think that's I don't know if that answered the question, but that's kind of my approach to it.
Yeah, I appreciate both of your insight on this, and I kind of want to go to, you know, my perspective a little bit here. And I want to use an example, and we're going to talk about Mason Miller from the Oakland Athletics. Super talented guy all throughout the minor league system, all throughout his minor league career. But all you heard was, well, his command isn't great. He's constantly hurt. He can't stay on the field. And so a lot of people were looking at that and undervaluing him because they felt like, well, he has all of these weaknesses. And so obviously that has to downgrade him. And now he's sitting in as a closer and having one of the best rookie relief seasons ever. And so I think that's kind of an example of how a lot of times we can let our frustrations with a player get in the way of what he is capable of doing. And when you watch Mason Miller pitch, it's very obvious what he's capable of doing. It's very obvious how good he is, but people let his negatives get in the way of his positives. And I think I've tried to do better. Waldrop is an example of, well, there's a lot of negatives around his command, but that splitter is so good, we have to take into account and not undersell what a player's strengths really can mean. Even if a guy, you know, you, Gaurav, you talked about floor, a guy, don't undervalue how good of a floor his fastball and splitter gives him. Don't look at that and say, well, he may not start, so I have to put this other guy that could, should, will be a starter above him. No, we have to look at how good could his strengths make him, even if it doesn't work out. And I think that Waldrop's a good example of that. Miller's a good example of kind of not undervaluing strengths when evaluating players.
Well said, Garrett. That was a really, really excellent question. All right, moving on. Getting back into some evaluation. So I'm going to go to you first on this one. Is Nacho Alvarez the best position prospect in the system? Anyone that could develop as an OBP guy besides him, because the big league club isn't slugging and their OBP is dreadful.
Outside of Keyshawn Ogans, he is the best position player prospect in the system. At this point, he is. Ceiling-wise, that's one of the things that kind of goes in the last question. There's difference between, is he the best at this current time as far as where he is at in his development and talent-wise? Yes. But there are some guys with higher ceilings that if they can develop and improve upon some of the things that are holding them back a little bit, that can be overpass him. That and the OBP thing, yes, there are some players. I think, for example, Nacho Alvarez is that kind of player that it's a different dynamic than what is on the current major league roster for the Braves, right? Where they, you've seen right now, if they're not hitting the ball at the ballpark, they have a hard time scoring runs. I think he could be just bring a different dynamic to the lineup if someone like him were to be injected in there. But I'll defer to Garrett as far as the other guys that are kind of high OBP guys.
Yeah. Garrett, all right, let's hear from you.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably put Nacho as the top prospect in the system. But I will say, like, when I evaluate players, I don't necessarily take in just my personal view of a player. I like to get a range of opinions. And I think a lot of people see Jose Perdomo as maybe the better guy. I've never had a chance to really watch him play on a daily basis. So it's hard for me to say, well, this guy Nacho, who gets on base at an extremely high rate, we know he's a smart guy. We know he's been a good defender. All of these things, it's hard for me to look at that and say, well, Perdomo is better. This 17-year-old that I've never watched play, he's better. It's hard for me to say that. So for me right now, I would say Nacho is better. And I think that he's another example of a guy who you undervalue because you look at him and he really doesn't have a lot of power, but a guy with a 370, 380 on base percentage, it's really hard to get on base that much and not be at least an average major league hitter. And if he's an average major league hitter and an average major league shortstop, which I think he could be both, that's a really, really valuable player right there immediately. So he's a guy that I think maybe it's not the sexiest profile, and we fall in love with the sexy profiles a little too often. But it's a, when you look at the inputs and you look at how those inputs play at the major league level, that's a really good major league player, more than likely. Perdomo is a guy that could be a high on base threat. I really think outside of that, there's not a guy that I'm really confident projecting to a high on base guy. You know, Guanipa could be that guy, but he's so raw with his approach. Then you look at a guy like maybe David McCabe, who strikes out a bit too much, but he does take a lot of walks. He does hit the ball hard. That's a guy who could be a high on base guy, but he's hurt right now. Is he going to hit for enough power to really even get to the major league level? Because he's a first baseman DH type, in my opinion. So in terms of guys that I'm really confident are going to get to the major league level, Nacho is really the only guy. And then Perdomo is a guy that he's so far away, I'm not confident he's going to get to the major league level, but I definitely could see that being a very high on base guy, just because everyone says he's a very good hitter. And the video we have on him, the limited amount of video we have on him, shows that he is a very good hitter.
Yeah, Jose Perdomo projects as an outstanding hitter. But the, like you said, there's too many question marks at this point regarding him. We haven't really seen him with our own eyes. Guanipa, again, he's doing well in the FCL, but it's the FCL. He's still very young. Hard to really say anything about his overall ceiling. I will say one player I would throw in there, he's not a high OBP guy, but he still has what I believe is a MLB floor, and that's Drake Baldwin. He again, like Nacho, not the sexiest, you know, report on him. It's not someone that projects as an all-star or anything like that, but he's a guy that can hit right-handed pitching very well. He handles the staff well, does decent trying to throw players out. Again, someone that I believe has an MLB floor, which then makes him incredibly valuable in my eyes. All right, moving on from there, Garrett, I'm going to go to you first on this one. I know how passionate you are about this player. We just had a question about him just a couple of podcasts ago, and it made me go in my rant. Is there any hope for Ambioris Tavares? Seems even after a swing change, the swing isn't really the issue.
More than hope, I have a level of confidence in him. Now, at this point, having seen how he's developed both as a person and as a player. If you look at his last couple of weeks that he played, he was very, very good. And it wasn't just he had a lucky stretch. He legitimately looked good. His approach was better. His swings were better. He was hitting the ball harder. All of that was very good. Obviously, defensively, we think he's a phenomenal player there. So the development we've seen from him gives me a lot of confidence that, look, that's easily a top 30 guy, maybe even a top 20 guy within really just seeing that few weeks of development from him. And so absolutely, even last year, I wasn't sitting here saying all hope is lost. It was just more, I felt last year he needed kind of a mental reset, and he's gotten that. And he clearly went in this offseason, put in a ton of work, especially on his approach, and it's paid off. It took a while to pay off, but it has paid off. It sucks that he's lost that momentum at this point with the injury, but I do think that compared to the person that I saw a month ago, this is a major league quality player who there's a lot of risk there. He probably doesn't make it to the major leagues, but he wouldn't have to do a ton to get to major league quality with his defense. And I think that what we've seen from him this year, especially over the past month, has been as impressive of a turnaround as I've seen from any prospect, really.
Joe, before I go to you, I have been informed that Ambioris is in very good spirits and is looking forward to his return. Who knows when that will be? We're looking at potentially a couple of months, but Joe, let's hear from you.
No, I just want to quickly just kind of say again, Garrett, with the spot on assessment there, and just for me at least, he could be one of those players that I think we could trend into where we're sounding negative just because of the seeing what raw talent there is and then being frustrated in kind of him seeming to stall out. But over the last few weeks, right before he was injured, there was definitely, it was almost like a light just came on, and it was just like, you could see that he looked like just a completely different player. Like there were things were clicking for him. And again, it's always, it always just really, really sucks when you see an injury happen at a time like that, when it's like, okay, they're getting it now. And it's just the worst possible timing. Cause sometimes those injuries happen when they need a reset, right? They need a break cause they're clearly pressing, but he was coming on strong. And I'm glad that he's in good spirits and it shows maturity, that he's not beating himself up over it or being overly negative. And I'm hoping that when he comes back, he can pick up where he left off, because it was very, very encouraging seeing just his change in approach and the better at bats he was stringing together. He was hitting with some power. And again, the defense was always strong. So hoping that he recovers well and gets back on the field as soon as possible and picks up right where he left off, because I'm excited to see where he can go to finish out this year.
If he starts where he left off, that's definitely a top 20 player for me. Moving on. All right. Now we're going to go talk about last year's draft. Excluding Hurston Waldrop, what does the ceiling, along with the most realistic outcome, look like for some of those top picks we had? That's Hackenberg, Cooler, Ceballos, Bauman, Isaiah Drake. Garrett, I want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on that draft, on last year's draft, and again, the ceiling and the most realistic outcome?
I would like to go ahead and throw another name in that mix, and that's Lucas Braun, 6th round pick. I actually think he
Love it.
might be I think behind Waldrop, he might be the next best prospect to come out of that draft. He's been fantastic with the Rome Emperors this year. Really great make, a kind of guy that would be overlooked because he doesn't necessarily have a huge strengthness other than his command. He doesn't really have a strength. He does a lot of things well and looks better than what you may better than the numbers for sure. A guy I think that could be a pretty solid mid to back into the rotation starter and has a fairly high floor. The rest of the group, I'll be honest, a lot of these guys have struggled, and it's been hard to balance what the Braves are doing because we know the Braves have focused a lot on development with guys. I think Keeler has regressed a little bit this year in terms of his stuff, though his command has been better. And then you kind of look at, really Hackenberg, Keeler are guys that ceiling wise, I really don't know that they're better than back end starters. And both of them have fairly high floors. Hackenberg usually throws a lot of strikes. He has had some trouble with his command this year, but overall, those guys have been fairly disappointing to me this year. And I don't want to give up on them yet, but they're definitely not guys that I'm super excited about. Ceballos, the ceiling is he's hitting well now, getting on base a lot. If he can do that and hit 15 home runs a year, play a great third base, that's a very good player. That's a consistent major league starter, not necessarily an all-star, perennial all-star type, but solid major league starter as a ceiling. That's fine. I think, unfortunately, realistic outcome for him at this point is he probably is more of a quad A player just because right now I don't think the defense is going to end up being major league quality. Now, with Ceballos, I would like to say, we've heard a lot of good things about him off the field, that he's a great guy, hard worker. And so that does, I will say, that helps with guys and their projections. If we hear a ton of people say, hey, Sabin Ceballos, great guy, we love him, we know he works hard, we believe in him. Well, those guys, they're around him every day, and I'm inclined to believe them and improve my projections of guys. Bowman, ceiling-wise, mid-rotation starter, very good changeup right now, good command for his age, good sinker. I'm not a fan of the slider, and so the realistic outcome for him is kind of low just because he has to develop a whole pitch to really be a major league starter, in my opinion. But athletically, there's good talent there. There's a ton to like about him. He's so young that it's hard to project his ceiling because we don't really know what he's going to look like at maturity yet. And then, of course, Idea Drake. Realistic outcome, of course, is he probably doesn't make the major leagues. I mean, this is a guy striking out 40% at the single A level, but again, another guy that we hear a lot of great things about him off the field. And if we're talking pure talent, there's maybe Guanipa Perdomo or the two other guys in the system that are that level of ceiling. So that's a guy that has perennial all-star type ceiling. It's just the likelihood of getting to that is fairly low. But I don't want to be, again, I don't want to be too negative on the guy because he's made a lot of improvements already this year. And we've heard a lot of great things about him off the field, and I know the Braves really like him. So, I really want to focus with him on kind of, being patient. Him and Bowman is both really the focus is going to be on patience with those guys and how do they look 3 years from now versus really focusing too much on what they look like right now. Pretty much anybody in A ball, their realistic outcome is, other than the elite guys, a realistic outcome for most A ball players is they're not making majors. So like that's your median outcome, and it kind of that sucks, right? That sucks to talk about, but that really is the reality for most of these guys, that their realistic outcome is they don't make the major league.
A note on Isaiah Drake. He has looked completely, well, I wouldn't say completely different, but he has looked better. He's still chasing that breaking ball down and away a little too much, but he is sitting back a little more and able to hold back his swing and then whip it around when he needs to go the opposite way. So very encouraging to see him. But like Garrett said, incredibly high ceiling. We have absolutely no idea what he could turn into because he is a, really a incredibly gifted athletically and takes it seriously. But it's hard to really say what his expected, his expected projectability to be because unfortunately, like also Garrett said, a lot of these players will most likely stall out in double A. And it's just that gap between those levels so insane that it's something that you see with the majority of players. Joe, we're going to go to you. How do you feel about last year's draft class?
Yeah, so this past draft for me, it's one that there were some really confusing drafts at the begin or picks at the front end of the draft, the Hackenberg, the Kuehler, guys that I'm not sold on. I think there's a lot of probability they turn out as relievers if they make it. There's some serious concerns with Kuehler and his delivery. But honestly, I just want to say that with Isaiah Drake, he's one of those players that when you see him play the way he's played earlier this week, where he had, was it 3 hits or 4 hits, running all over the field, making diving catch. It's easy to see why the Braves love this kid. And he's the most exciting player to watch on that roster. But then there's other days where you watch him and you see why there's so much variance in what between his ceiling and his floor. And it's just kind of a tough reality that with high school players, when you draft them, that the real likelihood is that they never make it. But if he can come anywhere close to that ceiling, he is going to be someone that is an exciting player with just ridiculous raw talent. So, but other than that, Garrett was spot on with his take.
Garrett's pretty good at what he does, isn't he?
Uh,
But
I yes.
Joe, we're gonna go to you here first. Given the moves of Nacho Alvarez Jr. and Drake Baldwin to AAA, what are we looking at as far as timelines on them, and what are fair expectations when they do come up? I was hoping we wouldn't need to bring up Alvarez until 2025, but it seems that might be changing as the season progresses. Joe, what do you got to say?
So, I think it's a little early to be making those statements. However, it's not necessarily something that's outside the realm of possibility. Like I said in a previous question, Nacho Alvarez could be someone that could just bring a different dynamic to the lineup if inserted for some reason. I think this shows that if there was some sort of long-term absence by Orlando Arcia, that Nacho Alvarez is right there. I think as something that Garrett and the rest of us discussed a little bit, I don't know that the Braves are excited about keeping players in Mississippi. Like, I think that maybe it could just be they want to get a closer look at him. I don't know what it means from the Braves perspective, but what I can say is it shows you how close these guys are to the majors. I think Drake Baldwin, as Gaurav said, has a future as a major leaguer. Even if it's just as a backup, it's a good complement to have to a catching core on a team, because if you have a left-handed backup catcher and a right-handed starter, I mean, backup catchers play more than the backup in pretty much any other position. So he's gonna get time to play. He can hit right-handers. He's a good player, and he's working with Chadwick Trumbull. So it could be that they wanted to get him up there working with Trump. I know that the Braves like him, so it's hard to say. I just know that they're close, and they're really good players. So it's kind of good to have them close to Atlanta for fans who want to get a chance to see him.
I'm going to quickly add on and combine another question. Do you have a full season projection for him? Let's just say stick to slash line for Nacho Alvarez. What do you see him producing and over the course of a full major league season?
I'm gonna let Garrett take that one.
All right, Garrett. So let's hear your overall timelines and expectations for Nacho, and then for Nacho and Drake, I'm sorry. And then let's go ahead and say, if you had to throw out a full season line for Nacho, what would it be?
Yeah, so I think in both cases, this doesn't change my timeline for either of them. The Braves have shown consistently that if a guy's at double A, he is a candidate to come up to the major level. So doesn't change my timeline for either of the guys. I like it because we're not having to see them hit in the Southern League, where both of them, their power numbers this year are down. And how much of that is the league? How much of that is the jump to Double A? We don't know. So Nacho Alvarez has already hit a home run at the Triple A level as of the time recording this. He hit it like 10 minutes ago. So we're already seeing that maybe there was some issues in the Southern League. I think in both cases, I like that you brought up Baldwin earlier, because he's a guy that I've been trying to convince people on for a while. Overall, the numbers are not fantastic for him, but he hits righty so well. One, that's the fat half of the platoon, so there's going to be plenty of opportunities for him to hit. He seems like a good leader, a guy that people like, good clubhouse type guy. And so when you look at it from a backup catcher role, which I do think is ultimately where he ends up, or a platoon catcher, that's extremely valuable. And he's improved so much defensively that I have a lot of confidence with him behind the plate. And look, Travis d'Arnaud, love him. He's getting up there in age. He already had a near concussion scare earlier in this year. He's had a bunch throughout his career. We don't know when it's going to end for him. If he has a concussion next week, and that could be it. And so having him at the AAA level, handling higher level pitching, is good for him. And he's a guy that if someone goes down for an extended period of time, I still think it's Trump this year. But I think next year it will be Baldwin, and he will either fit into the third catcher role with d'Arnaud at their major league level, or he'll back up Murphy if, for whatever reason, d'Arnaud decides to retire. I do think that, a little bit of a tangent, I think that the Braves are going to keep d'Arnaud as long as d'Arnaud wants to play. So I don't think that's a question. It's just a matter of next year, they're going to use a third catcher at some point. Guys always get hurt. So I think next year you'll see Baldwin at major league level. And I think that he's at least defensively ready, and that's the main thing you're going to look for from a third catcher. He can handle a staff well, good clubhouse guy, can defend. Alvarez, I think if there's an injury in the middle infield, he would be the go-to. I just don't see anybody else that hits well enough for me to feel like they can come up and get consistent major league at-bats. I don't know that he's a long-term answer at shortstop, because I don't know if the defense is going to play well enough to say, yeah, that's an everyday guy. I do think the bat plays at the major league level. I do think his ceiling is limited, but I think he hits the ball hard enough that he's going to get on base consistently and be a major league baseball player. I think that he's going to get a shot in spring training next year to earn that job. Arcia doesn't make an amount of money where you're forced to play him. He'd be fine if he ends up on the bench. I don't think he would. I would not make Alvarez the favorite for the 2025 job. But if Arcia continues to struggle, 2025, I do think that Alvarez is going to get a consistent shot. At this point in time, I would not expect him to get a major league shot unless someone gets injured. Arcia has struggled this year, but you kind of expect that he's going to be a little bit better than this. Like, you never expect a guy to be this bad, and he's so consistent defensively that he's valuable enough that the difference between him and Nacho is fairly negligible if you're looking at overall value. So I think that they're going to stick with Arcia for now. And then, of course, if someone gets injured, that's an option you look at. But I don't think that they're – I think it's just a matter of approach-wise, he's better than Double-A pitchers right now. And he needs to, I think, be in a run environment that isn't so oppressive. If you want me to, if I was projecting him to a major league flash line right now, it probably wouldn't be very good. Guys coming up that first time, it's hard, man. I mean, if he's an 85 WRC plus guy, you probably feel kind of excited about that, because he's really only had half a season above Double A. Long term, again, I said it earlier, probably an average major league hitter, maybe 100, 110 WRC plus. If he hits for more power, suddenly that could be 120, 130. Like, ceiling for him, if the power comes, because we know he's strong enough to hit for power. The power comes, that could be a very exciting player, especially if he sticks at shortstop. I think realistically right now, he's probably a replacement level player, a little bit above that maybe. But I don't necessarily have some sort of high hopes that he's going to do like Michael Harris did and come up to the major league level and immediately be an impact player. I just don't think that he's ready for that. I think that there's too many questions with his swing. But if we're talking about a guy that can handle it from a mentality perspective, from an approach perspective, from a defensive perspective, I think he could handle it. And he would be serviceable in a major league role right now. he would be a good on base guy, but I don't think that he's at a point right now that I'm saying get him in the major league lineup. We have to replace Arcia. I think that the difference between the two, especially with the defense that Arcia brings to the table, isn't enough to be willing to make that decision. I think that we're all just kind of, it's been rough for the Braves for a while, and we're all just kind of like, we want to do something different. We want to see something different. And I think that it would be unwise to really put that those expectations on us, on Alvarez.
Yeah, I think it's important to note it's the power potential with Arcia that makes him, you know, as intriguing as he is. You said it really well about Nacho's overall, you know, he does have some limitations. Of course, if he takes the Ozzy approach and, you know, throughout his development just starts hitting bombs, and then there's a lot more value in that profile. But as is, you know, if I had to put a line, I'd probably say, you know, somewhere around like a 250 to 260 batting average, and then an OBP sitting anywhere respectable, you know, 340 to 360. But then the limitations with his overall approach, slugging somewhere around, you know, 325, which would probably put you around, I would say, right where Garrett's saying, like an 85, 90 WRC player, which WRC plus player, which is slightly below league average, but with good enough defense to really try and offset some of that value. It's just that jump. It's major leaguers are a special breed, and you can really tell, you know, those high end, those high tool, not high tool, but the ones with the really large ceilings, they're just a different breed. It's something that really sticks out about them. Of course, I'm not going to just sit here and say Nacho isn't a major leaguer. I do believe it's just, we need to see some additional power to really make him stand alone and increase his overall value as a player. But let's go ahead and move on to the next one. And Garrett, I'm going to go to you first. We've talked about this in the group chat quite a bit, and I know both of your feelings. Are you encouraged by the Waldrop start or either of Spencer's? Let's go ahead and add on yesterday's start as well. Stuff looks good, but they seem to have a lot of work to do before they can be effective.
My opinion on Waldrop hasn't changed. He is exactly what we thought he would be. The splitter is major league quality, but major league hitters are just too good. And they are going to be capable of laying off that splitter and forcing him to work with fastball slider. And I don't think those pitches are ready yet. I just don't think that he's ready to be a major league starter. Major league reliever, possibly. Major league starter, no. And so what I saw from him was kind of what I expected out of him. Once those guys adjusted, they were able to spit on that splitter, and it was tough for him. And so I think that really it's just a matter of, look, the dude just needs time at AAA to develop, especially against more advanced hitters, and he'll be fine. I'm not worried about him. It's just, it is what it is. He just wasn't ready. Schwellenbach, it's kind of similar because, look, I mean, the guy had two AA starts, and the fact that he's at the major level and even being serviceable is incredible given how little he has experience-wise. I'm encouraged in the sense that the cutter is better than I thought it was going to be. So that's one thing that I really like out of him, is that cutter has been better than I thought it was going to be. Fastball velocity is good. He was averaging over 96, which is higher than what he was averaging at the high A and double A level. So good velocity. He's holding it into the games. He's healthy. That's a big thing. And he's done well. I think that he's probably the guy that I would go to for that fifth starter spot right now. I think that he can stay in a rotation right now. He's not going to be great, but he's going to be okay. And there's a lot of potential there, and he can really develop at the major league level. I think he needs a little bit of development with those breaking balls, and I think that we've kind of seen that his curveball and slider are a little bit too close together, that it's difficult to really feel like they're – it's difficult to feel confident in either of his breaking balls just because of how similar they are shape-wise. So I do think that there needs to be a little bit of pitch development, but the splitter is where I would like it to be. The cutter is much better than I thought it would be. Overall, he's kind of been even a little bit better than I expected. And I would say that, yes, he needs work on those breaking balls, but the slider is major league quality. Curveball has been fine. Everything else has been good. And I'm encouraged by what we've seen out of Schwellenbach. And then, you know, with Waldrop, it is what it is. I think we all felt like this was way too quick for him.
Just to add some additional praise, that Schwellenbach splitter, one pitch of the day for Baseball Prospectus yesterday, it is grading extremely positive across pretty much all models. And like Garrett said, that cutter is a lot better than I think any of us really expected it to be, especially how quick he developed it and the overall velocity at which he could throw it. Joe, let's hear from you. Were you encouraged by either one of Waldrop's starts or Spencer Schwellenbach so far?
I would say starting with Schwellenbach, I'm impressed with both. I think his first start, he looked really, really well. He kind of just made one mistake, really, that hurt him. Otherwise, it was about as well as your debut could go. And then this start, he went against a tough team. I mean, the Orioles are good, man, and he looked pretty decent. I mean, he really kind of got the short end of the stick there. The offense just didn't really have his back. And as Garrett said, if I had to choose between the two to kind of just ride it out in the fifth spot for right now, I'd go Schwellenbach 100 times out of 100 right now, because it's just he just seems more polished. And he just, you know, we I Garrett and I talked about this in the podcast we did about his call up, and it's just he isn't somebody that's going to hurt you. He's not going to walk a ton of guys. He's not going to let the game get away from him. And that's kind of just what the Braves need right now. And yes, there's still some development that needs to be done with him. He's not a finished product. I mean, we talked about this on his player profile episode as well. Hasn't pitched a ton in pro ball. So he's still fairly new to this pitching thing. And so there's a lot of untapped potential, but I think he is the better option as far as giving you a chance to win everything. With Waldrop, again, he is kind of what we expected. That splitter was devastating, but you know, again, these hitters are just too good to just think you're going to get away with throwing one pitch. You know, that's why, you know, starters who only have one or two, you know, two pitches, they don't last very long. They don't make it through the order multiple times, unless you're someone like Spencer Strider, who just has a devastating fastball and that slider. But even then, he added a third pitch because, you know, these hitters are just too good nowadays. There's too much video out there. There's going to be a book out on you. So Waldrop's just, I feel honestly that he shouldn't have gotten the call up. I just don't think that they were confident in any of the options available at AAA. So they felt like, hey, he's the next best option to bring up. You know, he kind of looked pretty decent the first time through the order. I mean, looked really good the first time through the order, but then it just, you could see there's clear development that needs to be had with him. So again, I'm not really surprised with him. I'm not, to me, it doesn't diminish his value or anything. So I don't want to sound too negative. I just feel like he wasn't a finished product and he kind of got rushed by circumstance, and I'm still excited about what he can be.
I think one player that we can throw into that mix for potential, fifth start is going to be Allen Winans, who has returned from blister issues. He's been fantastic for the Stripers. His changeup is generating whiffs at a crazy rate right now, and he's looking like the Winans that really pitched extremely well last year and saw himself in Atlanta. And again, that has that major league experience, is able to get out major league hitters, and has a true plus pitch with that changeup. So if anything were to happen, I think there's a good chance we see someone like a Wine and step in before we see Hurston come back. I think like the both of these guys said, he's got a little work that needs to be done. I'm not going to say it's a disservice to be up in the majors. It's an incredible honor, and I'm sure it's a cherished moment for him. But there's too many, not too many. There's a little work that needs to be done, but we are very hopeful that, especially if he works on that second kind of slider that Garrett was talking about a couple of episodes, you're going to see someone with even higher potential and even more promise. So, tons to like about both pitchers. Both these guys really knocked it out of the park with their answers. And now we got time for one more. And I love this question. And it's kind of also a call out against us when we did our own rankings. What more does EJ Exposito have to do to earn a promotion to Double A or even a spot on the organization top 30? Well, I don't think that's really going to be an issue for us. Currently, he's outperforming every prospect on the organization's top 30 and perhaps every hitter in the entire farm system. Joe, let's hear from you first. What are your thoughts on EJ? What's he got to do to earn that promotion and earn your spot in your top 30?
Well, first of all, I had EJ in my top 10, just so you know, but Gaurav told me I couldn't do it. No, I'm kidding. That was a whiff on a, I look, I love that kid. I think the player that he is this year is something that we hope to see from him and just hadn't seen it. So it was tough to really bank on that, him hitting like he did this year. And it's just, he's a player that, like with Isaiah Drake, he was always had the talent, but he's putting it together. And it's one of those things where I love that when a player does, when it happens with a player, I love a player who's just raw, has raw talent, and it starts coming together, and he has a personality. He's someone that fans can get excited about because he's just fun to watch. I think he's done enough to already make it in the top 30. Like, I think we've already said it multiple times that we kind of have some egg on our face, which I'm happy about. I'm perfectly okay with saying, you know what, I was wrong about this, and this player has shown me something that now opened our eyes. And honestly, I think I'm not alone in this, that I'm not sure what more he has to do to get to that double A level, especially with the promotions that have happened from double A recently. I almost wonder if the weather situation in Mississippi that happened this week might have had played some had something to do with it, but also I don't know. Also, double A just kind of seems like a crappy place to play in some of those ballparks right now. So I mean, maybe it's better for him to not be there hitting the way he is right now. But again, back on track, he's an exciting, fun player, and I'm very, very excited, and he will be on my midseason top 30. Clearly he's earned it, and I'm excited to watch him the rest of this year.
All EJ has done this month is has a hit 314 with an 813 OPS over 10 games. Garrett, let's hear from you. What do you got to say about EJ Exposito?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should stand by our preseason ranking. What he had done at the beginning of the year, I don't think was enough for him to be a top 30 guy at the beginning of the year. What he's done since, clearly a top 30 guy. Like Joe said, great personality, and that's really one of the things he brings a lot of value just in terms of his presence, and a guy that I hope makes a major leagues because I really love the guy. Talent wise, he's a top 30 guy. The system's not very good. There's no way you can look at a guy like that and say he's not a top 30 guy. He's made so much progress this year. He's cut his strikeout rates. He's hitting for more power. He's playing, defense has been hit or miss. He's made a few errors in some recent weeks that have been a little ugly, but overall, he has defensive talent. He has the speed. He has the glove work. His arm is good enough to kind of play a fringe shortstop, definitely a good second baseman. Overall, I think he's done well for himself. A top 30 guy. I don't know that he's necessarily a top 15, top 20 type guy, but definitely a top 30 guy that we can look forward to as major league potential, could be a utility type player. Definitely a lot to like there. And if he continues to hit for power, I mean, dude, if you're going to put up a 250 isolated power in that league with that home park, that's extremely impressive. The move to double A, I think, like you said, it seems like guys are avoiding double A this year. It's also worth it to mention there's a lot of infield talent at double A. Specifically, Cal Conley is a guy that I think they should get every day at bats. Similar kind of utility type player who's done a lot defensively. Keyshawn Ogans is a guy that needs every day at bats, a similar utility type player. And then, of course, David Fletcher, they're paying him enough money. He better be playing every day down there. So there's a lot of, it's hard to get at bats in that organization. And so for him, even though none of those guys are necessarily huge top prospects, they're guys that have enough priority that they need to get at bats. And Nacho clearing out of there maybe creates a little bit of an opportunity, but EJ is getting consistent at bats where he is. That's a very good thing for him. He needs to continue to get those at bats, and you can kind of reevaluate in a couple of weeks based on what you want to do with those other guys. I think that was kind of the issue with you know, Drake Baldwin is. They have a lot of catchers at AAA, so it was hard to promote him, even if he had started to do well and seemed like he was ready. I think that's kind of an issue that he's facing right now, though I will say, you know, I mentioned Lucas Braun earlier. He should be in AA if there's really no one blocking him pitching-wise and they're not doing it. So there's something going on with them right now where it seems like they're avoiding AA for whatever reason. It could be the field conditions this past week were just not good enough and they didn't feel like promoting guys. But overall, it seems like he's been a little bit weird about AA, and I think that he's at a point where he clearly deserves to go to AA. He's been well under 20% strikeout rate for like over a month and a half now. So he's hit the markers that he needs to hit, and now it's just a matter of do they have space for him and do they feel like AA is a place they really want guys developing, because so far this year, it really doesn't seem like they do.
Some of those improvements Garrett was talking about. Last year, EJ had a total of 8 home runs through 48 games. He already has 10. He already has stolen 17 bases again. He had 23 last year. The strikeout rate has dropped from 30% to 22.6%. But like Garrett said, over the past month, it's been even better. His ISO is at a career high 246, meaning he's more than doubled it from last year. Everything has gone up across the board for EJ. He has earned any kind of praise he is getting anywhere from anywhere. He's been incredible this entire year, and he's been one of the best parts of the Rome Emperor's offense. Well, that was a lot from all of us, and especially from the two of you. That's all the questions that we have for this week's episode. I speak for both Joe and Garrett when I say thank you all so much for your input. We hope we answered everything that you asked for. We had a lot of fun doing this mailbag episode. It's been the first one for us, so it was really cool to be able to interact and hear from all of you. So again, thank you for that. Join us early next week as we break down a player we talked about a lot today, and that is none other than Drake Baldwin. Thanks so much, everyone, and we look forward to joining you next week.